Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and our reverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 4, Episode 26, Broken Link, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and directed by Les Landau. Broken Link aired June 17th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Odo is plagued by an unknown ailment that threatens to kill him. Meanwhile, the Federation and the Klingon Empire move closer to war.
Bum bum bum! Sound effects.
Here we are. The end of Season 4. Wow. It's...
This season...
Wow, I'm like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed this season. It's been my favorite season so far.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's just wild to think that we have reached, like, the tipping point where we have covered more seasons of the show than seasons of the show that are left.
Yes, that is true. I hadn't thought of that until just now, so thank you. Right. thank you for that.
So what I'm saying is it's been a long road getting from there to here.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. My time is finally near. I can see season 5 coming up at last. I will touch the sky. Anyways.
I just want you to know that while I was not joining you in singing, I was swaying.
There you go. It's like getting the proverbial like lighters up or
yeah.
You know, putting the flashlights on our phones.
Yes, you know? The phone flashlights.
Dating myself by talking about lighters first.
That's a flown... A phone torch to you people in England.
All right. So, season 4 finale. Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I did. But I didn't remember the real boy part. I forgot about the real
boy. Oh, no, you didn't?
I forgot that happens. But I remembered, like, the rest of it. I just didn't remember what the, like, punishment was. And I remembered the Gowron part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this episode a lot. I think it's exciting. I cannot wait to settle the cliffhanger. I'm like, it's a Garak episode. We have Gowron. Like, I couldn't be happier, honestly.
It's all happening. Yeah, and, like... With the, like, caveat that obviously I missed last week's recording for body parts, this is definitely, I think, one of the strongest episodes we've, like, covered in a while. Like,
yes.
Again, it hasn't been, like, a bad run, per se, but there's been a lot of, like, yeah, okay, this one's good.
Yeah.
Or, ugh, but, like...
Yeah, like, we missed, like, you on last week's episode, because that was a really fun one to discuss, and that was a good one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question for you. Did you watch Body Parts? Be honest.
You know what? It's funny. I was going to watch both of them last night.
Yeah.
But I was going to do it backwards to make sure that I started with the one that we were covering. But then I was like scrolling around and found a movie that sounded interesting on Criterion. So no, I didn't rewatch Body Parts.
That's okay. What movie did you watch on Criterion?
It is called Lurd. It's from 1947. It's part of their collection they have now, the Gothic Noir.
It stars
Lucille Ball.
Oh, yes. I intend to watch that. I had forgotten the name. But yes, I'm going to watch that one.
Yeah, it's like really good. So like she's a taxi dancer.
No, that's fun. I've never seen her not in a comedy.
Yeah, no, I think this kid has a future. no, she's a taxi dancer that ends up, you know, getting kind of wrapped up in what's called, there's kind of this serial killer that's going around that tends to target, like, young women through personal ads in the newspaper and sends Scotland Yard poems, like, right before.
So it's like Jack the Ripper crime? If a newspaper was involved.
Kind of. So... It's very much that. And obviously, she plays an American in London.
But, right. That's good. No, good. I don't think I would want to hear it. Her have, like, a British accent or something.
No, I had a lot of fun with it. And, just the whole, like, again, obviously, taxi dancers aren't really, like, a role we have in nightlife anymore. But it's, like, it's definitely like a form of like erotic labor.
Yeah, right? For sure.
And so it's yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like reminders of, and this is why films like time travel, you know, remembrance of a different time, and even like, oh, like the police actually in this movie care about like missing taxi debt. Anyways, yeah, there's like lots of vectors of analysis there.
So. Awesome. That sounds interesting. And it is definitely on my list. Yeah, I knew it got added this month, I think. Every month I go through the like list of what's coming and going.
It's not on there anymore, but I finally caught Johnny Guitar.
Oh, I haven't seen that movie.
That was pretty good
too. Last night I watched a Criterion DVD, Island of Lost Souls. It was a Dr. Moreau adaptation from 1932. Oh, nice. And Bela Lugosi was in it as like one of the creatures on the island.
Oh, yeah.
And Charles Laughton was Dr. Moreau, and he was like horrifying.
Speaking of Universal Monsters,
yes, Alums, Abigail.
Boris Karloff is also in
the word. Have you watched the trailer for the new movie Abigail that's coming out?
No, not yet.
It's a Universal Monster movie. Like, so that's exciting.
Oh, work. All right, back to Star Trek. Thank you for indulging.
Oh no,
in film chat.
I am always pro. Like, let's have a quick discussion of what we've been watching this week. Like, I just think that's interesting. So I'm always going to steer the conversation there. So yeah, I was reading up on this episode and I learned that the season finale, as like a story, actually came from a freelance writer named George Brozak, and instead of the actual writing team, which is not something that was common for a season finale for Star Trek. I'm not really sure what happened, but I guess it got submitted, and then he ended up only taking credit for the story, and then the actual writing staff like might have reworked some of it, so you know, Ira and Robert are credited as the writers. And I'm like, I always wonder what actually like goes down to make those writing credits change.
Yeah, it's like how, and I think there are like, I don't know them like intricately, but I think there are like various like WGA, like Writers Guild, like rules about how that credit works out and how like, how much you like, you know, can change the story or whatever.
That makes sense. So this is funny because I know Odo was getting judged by the changelings because of what he did in the season finale of last year. So this kind of feels like a little bit of a wrap up to that. Not a wrap up, but like a consequences of that. But like when Sisko and Bashir were just sitting there, like watching Odo be in the Great Link, like with his head popping up every so often, it just looked like they were watching him have like an orgy.
the skipping rocks bit was pretty
good. Oh yeah, was it also made
me wonder, it's like, it's very nice of the founders to even have that little bit of like, you know, solid rock island floating in the Great Link for, you know, visitors. Then it made me wonder too, it's like, wait, is that actually like real rock, or you can see me do air quotes when I said real.
Yes.
Or is that just another founder that's shapeshifted as a rock? Float around.
Yeah, I did assume it was a real rock, but like it would be like throwing a rock at people or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so interesting too, like, and I wonder what we could decide that this means for like the founders, kind of, you know, if they've become even more like militant or utilitarian or whatever. But when we first go to the first founder's homeworld, the ones that the Romulans and the Cardassians attacked, which was also had a little bit of follow-up from those episodes, it was lit differently. Remember, there were like trees. It was more like, it wasn't as like, the Great Link was all around, but it wasn't like literally as like, oh no, it's just the Great Link and this island, right? Because there were trees and there were flowers. They had the like shape-shifting kind of garden situation, and now they're like, well, we're and just gonna,
they're like an ocean,
have
now
a platform and an ocean. Yeah,
dive in.
Motion in the ocean. I'm going deep. Yeah.
I once saw a musical production that was like based on the music of the B-52s. And yeah. It was called Interplanet Janet, and it took place in space, and it was great. But obviously, they sang Rock Lobster.
Down, 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 down.
It was like in like a random theater in a small city in Maryland. So you would have absolutely loved it.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Especially if I was in the same state as Michael Bublé was the night of the, I think it was the All-Star Draft.
Oh my God. NHL. He was
friends. Like, if you haven't found that clip yet, please look it up. It's great.
It was amazing. I was sent it by Matt, obviously. I don't follow hockey, but like, oof, it was great.
And Will Arnett's there was one of the other like celebrity like captains yeah. of the All-Star team of one of the all and he's just sitting there and he looks so uncomfortable.
I don't think I ever heard Michael Bublé like talk before, so maybe I'll become like a MILF now or something.
I just really wonder how he feels about that now, how he felt about that the next morning. Anyways, enough about that.
Before we get into the actual episode, I just want to shout out to the sneezing scene. In the previous episode, we learned that Bajoran people, when they're pregnant, they do not get nausea or motion sickness, but they have uncontrollable sneezes. And I think it's really funny and silly, but like, if that were... I love the fact that they're like betting on how many sneezes in a row, but the fact that it's like a pregnancy symptom makes like now that the more I think about it, the more it's awful. Like, let's bet how many times she's gonna throw up today. Like, but because it's a cute sneeze thing, it's funny. But if it was like a real thing where they're like making fun of someone doing something over and over because they're pregnant, like that's terrible.
I mean, we know there's no space hippos, so it's yes, just like part of course for Starfleet, right?
Yeah. But like I was most shocked that Worf was participating.
Yeah, he was very much like plugged in with, you know, he's been there for a season now and he's like joking with the crew and he's like, you know, advocating for, you know, Odo not liking to socialize because Odo told him so.
Yeah.
Like, but you were trying to socialize with Odo when he said that.
I do enjoy also the bickering between Dax and Worf. I think it's because of Dax, likely, you know, they've become quick friends that he is so plugged in, because we all know that Dax is the most gossipy person on the station besides Quark. I mean, the two of them together are. So I just feel like he knows what's going on because of Dax. Like, Dax probably tells him everything. And he pretends he doesn't like it, but I think he probably does. So I feel like at first we can talk about Odo in the section that I like to call Odo listens to typo negative, before later finishing off with the Klingon threat.
So, I just kind of want to, like, let's just, like, jump in kind of, like, to the meat of it. And, like, you know, we even have to go to the story beat. So, Odo's punishment for being the first changeling to kill another changeling at, you know, one season ago, is he gets locked into his humanoid, you know, mostly human, just with his, like, same face kind of body, and isn't able, he's not a shapeshifter anymore and can't change shape and everything else. And like, I'm going to be very interesting going forward how that's handled and that's approached, because he's literally trapped in the wrong body and this has been forced upon him as a punishment. And Elisa, as we were kind of talking about before the podcast, I was at a rally, well, yesterday at the time of this recording, kind of rallying against some bills that the provincial government's doing that are decidedly anti-trans, and going to that yesterday and then later in the day watching this episode for this podcast and focusing on the idea of like Odo being trapped and in the wrong body, forcibly so by a community or government or group of his peers, theoretically his own people, that hit me really hard, and harder than it kind of ever has before. And like, I don't think they're obviously going for like a particular like strong kind of trans allegory, especially in what year it was, 96 or whatever, but just how devastating that punishment actually is, right? Like, it's heavy shit.
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry to be a bummer. I just like, out of all the, and this is why he's like this is part of why I like doing this podcast or things we're talking about movies. It's like the work stays static, but our responses to it can change and evolve as we change and evolve. And it's like, I don't even know if the show takes this punishment as seriously as it actually probably would, and how devastating it would be. You know what I mean? Yeah, just something kind of to watch going forward. I really liked, like, maybe we could, let's talk a bit about, you know, Garrick and kind of go back to the notes. Sorry, I didn't mean to, like, kill the flow there. I apologize.
I wanted to talk about Garrick trying to set Odo up on a date a little bit. At the beginning of the episode, Garrick calls Odo into his shop, and Odo thinks it's going to be for, like, a security reason, which I think, and he's, like, mad that it's not. But we get, he introduces,
No, sorry, I was, like, calling 911 to, like, set the cop up with your client.
Like, did he call him on the emergency line or just like like the like direct phone line? Like, we have like a non-emergency phone number for the police. I do love that Odo is like, this woman is like delightful. I liked her. She owns the Celestial Cafe and a new Bajoran restaurant. And Odo's just like, oh, I don't eat. Which, like, if that's fine, but like, okay, but maybe she doesn't mind that and she just wants to spend time with you, buddy.
Well, this way she's like, well, I do and I don't like to eat alone. I was like, work, girl.
Yeah, I loved it. And then I love after she leaves, Garrick was, yeah, when he's like, Odo's just like, next time you call me, it better be for a crime. And Garrick's just like, now that you've mentioned it, I have just seen a crime. I just really loved it. And this whole bit kind of, because when Odo collapses, Garrick like presses his comm badge to call for Dr. Bashir. And I have this whole like headcanon about the comm badges and how they, the actual comm badges can be person to person, but there's also like the wall comms, you know?
Yeah.
Because like people, like, Garrick doesn't have one, Quark doesn't have one. So I'm like, okay, what if the ones on their person are like people to people, but the ones on the wall, I just imagine there's like some dispatcher lady there that like has to filter out like if Quark's making like a joke, like a la like the kids calling Moe's bar in Simpsons or something. This was what was going through my head earlier this week when I watched this episode. I was like, the non-emergency comm badge like line or whatever. I do think it's also really funny and telling that after Odo's in sick bay, and Julian's like trying to figure out A, what's wrong with him, and B, like, what's causing it, that Odo thinks he can just like get back to his life. Like, you can't even hold your shape and you're trying to like leave the sick bay. Like, of course Odo would be a horrible patient.
It's just like Odo's like to Julian's like, you don't even know what's wrong with me, just let me leave. And Julian's like, well, I've noticed this. He's like, well, can you fix it? Do you know why that's happening? He's like, no, could be a virus, could be puberty, could be menopause. I'm just like, oh boy.
And Odo's just like, please keep that to yourself because space HIPAA doesn't exist. I also think it's really funny when everyone's like debating on like how to handle like Odo being sick, and Kira just like brings him work related things to read, and I'm like, of course this is what would bring Odo joy. Like, I would be like, I want my audiobook or to watch Star Trek. Like, I do not want to be reading work shit when I'm sick. And then he apparently finds some crime that he needs to stop. And I just love the idea that, like, when Odo's, like, sick, or if Odo wasn't around, that the station just becomes the purge, apparently. Like, everyone has all their crimes plotted to do in case Odo's incapacitated.
I did, like, I just think it's, Quark and Odo's relationship is, like, so, like, we've talked about it a lot, but it's just, like, he's saying, like, oh, he's gonna get away with all the shit, but he's clearly worried about Odo, and, like, that's why he goes to, like,
I know.
You know, say goodbye, or, like, yeah.
It was lovely. I really enjoyed that scene where he's, like, I'll be back, and, you know, Quark was just, like, I'm glad, but, like, not in those words.
Yeah, their relationship is very much, like, I don't know if I've ever, like, thought of it this way, but, like, you know how, like, under patriarchy a lot of times, like, cis, especially cis straight men, can't be like, oh, I love you, man.
Yeah.
You mean so much to me. Or, like,
sure.
Whatever. And it's all, like, these coded, like, you know,
that's my
negotiations
boy.
And, like, subtext or whatever. Yeah. That's kind of them, like, they're frenemies lens,
yeah.
But, like, it's all, like, how much they care about each other, like, is, like, unspoken, but it's, like, definitely there, right?
I can't wait till we get to their Pine Barrens episode. In trying to, like, help, that is not the correct character name. In trying to help Odo, you know, Bashir's not able to figure out what's going on, and he was like, I've consulted Dr. Mora, who we haven't heard about in a long time. You may recall he is the doctor that kind of raised Odo, and also Odo got his hairstyle from.
Yeah.
And I totally appreciate that Odo was like, thanks, but no thanks. Like, I do not need to go hang out with that guy any longer. And then Bashir was like, well, maybe we can figure something out on, you know, with Starfleet. And it's pretty clear by this point that the only thing that's going to help him is to go back to his people.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I know we've already talked about, you know, the punishment, and I completely agree with everything that you said. And at this point in the story, Odo doesn't know that that's why he needs to go back there, because we find out they actually made him sick at some point that we don't know of to bring him back, because he didn't come on his own. I read in Memory Alpha that I think that there's varying stories of, like, how he got sick, and we might not find out yet what I think we find out more about that eventually, or in some, like, book or something. I don't remember. Does that sound familiar?
My mind is kind of mush.
That's okay.
I just wonder how the, like, founders, like, infected Odo and all this. Like, it just, I don't know. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I don't remember if this is something that gets proven, but there was one explanation that when, in the first episode where, the first episode with Jeffrey Combs as Weyoun 4, I think he taps him on the shoulder he taps Odo on the shoulder, and then, like, that might be how.
Okay.
But, like, I don't think that that's something that's been said yet, but, like, I don't think that's a spoiler, so I'm just going to say that that's, I believe, one of the explanations given.
Okay.
I
also wonder, too, like, when Odo's, like, you know, in sick bay, and then, you know, even on the journey when, like, you know, Garrick gets drafted as the, you know, the bedside, you know, companion or whatever to keep, you know, Odo occupied but not be, you know, sympathetic to play those, you know, Enigma games or Enigma Tales. I kind of wonder why Odo's holding his shape this whole time. Like,
why bother?
The equivalent of, like, you don't feel well is, like, you just lie in bed and, like, you're a pile of feel like a pile of goo.
Yeah.
He actually be, like, I functionally know why from, like, a production standpoint, because you couldn't have Renee not there acting.
Also, but, how expensive would it be to just show the goo the whole time?
Touche.
I mean, this episode is a very goo-heavy episode, so... what's a little bit more time of goo?
Yeah.
So Garrick also, the plan is to go, you know, uncloak to the Gamma Quadrant and send messages to be like, hey, we're coming in peace. Odo's sick, blah, blah, blah. Please help him. I do love that Garrick wants to come along, and he gives this reason that it's because there was some fight between Cardassia and the founders or the Jem'Hadar, and he wants to know if there's any survivors left. And I almost didn't believe that that was the reason, but I think that legitimately was the reason he wanted to go. But also, in case there's any weaknesses he can find to stop them. That was a whole other bit of this episode that I found very hard to watch this time around. I know I'm kind of jumping ahead. Like, I love that Sisko agrees to let him come on if he distracts Odo, because we know Garrick's the best storyteller in the whole show, so he will be keeping him occupied with, like, innuendo and everything. And it works really well. The part that was really hard for me is that I'm really jumping ahead, but, like, I'm just gonna say it. Like, Worf catches Garrick trying to do something with the torpedoes on the ship. Like, after Garrick finds out from the head changing lady that there are no survivors, he basically is like, let's do a genocide. It's okay in the name of self-defense. And it is January of 2024, and that just, like, hits really poorly right now.
Yeah.
So I had a hard time with that bit, although I did enjoy Garrick and Worf, like, physically fighting with each other. I don't want to get too far into that, but, like, it was hard to watch that bit, specifically for the wording that Garrick uses.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of the best of Garrick and a lot of the worst of Garrick in this episode, and I think...
yeah.
Overall, that's, I think, what makes him, like, a compelling character.
Oh, yeah.
Not really another character like him that was allowed in Star Trek till up until this point. Like, the ambiguity of it all. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's totally, I totally get that. Look at us just peeling out, like, kind of the heavy things that are heavy reactions to, like, you know, this episode that probably didn't think as deeply about this shit right. as we are, like, 30 years later, right? But
yeah. Well, on a lighter note, did you notice that every single person that was, like, on the Defiant Bridge was like, I missed the cloaking device on this vessel? It was very much like, are they trying to remind us that she can cloak? Like, everyone was like, I feel naked.
Yeah, I think it's more like the scent of, like, vulnerability. Like,
yeah, that's
fair. Because they're trying to find the founders, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not, like, you know.
But yeah.
Was it Dax says something about being around all these naked men or something like that?
I loved that. It was really funny. I mean, I don't really... I do think we covered a lot of it, except that I do want to pull out that... I don't know why I said it that way. I do want to mention that the changelings and the female changeling lady has basically admitted to Odo that they've been spying on him. They, like, always know what's going on with him. Because we know they're everywhere. And she mentions the last time that they saw each other when he admitted having feelings for Kira and how she knows that Kira has a boyfriend. Yeah. And I was just like, this is so, like, high school or something.
For our younger listeners, that is a sample of the Beverly Hills 90210 theme song.
Yes. So she basically says, because when she shows up on the the bridge, she's like, bring me to Odo. And she does something, like she links with him to make him a little bit more stable than he was. But she's like, we're not giving you the true fix for this until you come and are judged for what you did last season.
Yeah. It's also interesting that it's like literally like exactly like a season apart for the consequences. Like it's literally like a year.
Yeah.
Later, it was season 3 finale to season 4 finale, right?
Yeah. I'm glad that they didn't just like let it go, you know, because that is a big deal that he did that, even if it was warranted in his eyes.
Yeah. I also found like Odo's approach to like, you know, when they're looking for ways to be able to like beam Odo up if like shit goes sour, and they're like, do you expect us just to like watch there while they judge you and do whatever to you? And Odo's like, that's exactly what I expect you to do, and goes on the speech about like how seriously he considers like, you know, justice, and like has brought other people to account, and like now it's his turn. I felt that was interesting, especially kind of like in light of, you know, some of the more problematic aspects that we've talked about for the last 4 seasons about, like, you know, Odo not believing in civil liberties. I don't know. It's like, do you think Odo's being softened a bit overall? Like, again, I know he has this very traumatic event that we, at the end of this episode, but like, it's just interesting, right? Like, I think they've softened Odo a lot since season 1.
Yeah, I think so.
Softened. But then he'll say something really shitty, right? So it's like, oh, maybe.
Yeah, he's not. He's a he ain't perfect.
Yeah.
Maybe he should go on a date with Shallan where he can actually eat and soften up some more. I kind of giggled that when Bashir tested his blood, he just phrased it, "You have type O negative blood." All I could think of was the band, which were like still like performing and stuff during the season that this was on, so I just hope that it was intentional.
Yeah, no, I might have been, but also like, isn't that like, isn't O negative like universal donor?
Oh yeah, it is. My dad is O negative.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I keep getting calls from the New York Blood Center to donate blood, but I don't remember if they've changed their rules about donating blood. I should look into that.
Does New Jersey not have its own?
The, it's the
like
it's
New York. It's that's like, or it's, a,
it's like a joint.
It's like a tri-state thing. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like there's a New Jersey part, but I think the New York Blood Center is like the parent of the, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
But yeah, they work in tandem. It's just like, they have, it's Nebraska Community Blood Bank, New Jersey Blood Services, New York Blood Center, and Rhode Island Blood Center are all one group. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. There's also a Delmarva, which is Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, for those that are not in this area and don't know that. What's the word? When you put like parts of the words together. But there's a
Kentucky hut.
I was thinking more like Benifer, and then some other groups. But yeah, they're more tri-state area stuff, and then randomly Nebraska.
I wonder how Nebraska got in there.
Me too. Do you want to talk about Gowron a little bit?
Yeah, so obviously we've had this kind of like Cold War, more or less, with the Klingons all season, starting with, you know, how the season kind of kicked off with Way of the Warrior and bringing Worf on and, you know, the invasion of Cardassia and everything else. And it definitely seems like the Cold War with the Klingons is coming to a head. They make some claims to Federation colonies that they gave up a century ago. And then the episode ends with saying, hey, get GTFO, we're coming and attacking within a couple hours. And then we find out that during the link, the changelings were trying to hide things from Odo that they're aware of, and that, you know, he would have been privy to as part of the Great Link and, you know, the sharing of knowledge and everything else. And one of the things that leaked through that he remembers is Gowron, mm-hmm. the head of the Klingon Empire, is a changeling.
I love.
And that's where the episode ends.
I did like the line delivery. Like, Ben was like, put the station on combat alert, which I'm very curious where that level is within the alert system. And then so like Kira's about to do it and Odo is like, wait a second, and he just like puts his arm on her like arm to stop her, and he says his like theory, and or he was like, don't, you know, whatever, and she's like, what are you saying? And I love that they have to like, even though it's kind of obvious what he means, they're like, we have to just say it plainly. I'm saying that he's one of them. It just made me laugh.
Yeah, so I guess we'll have to come back in season 5 and see what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
I always think it's kind of interesting how, like, in contrast to, like, TNG doing, like, direct season cliffhangers, DS9 doesn't not do that, but it, like, usually, and I don't... We'll have to see in season 5 if they continue this, but like so far to date, it's like sets up like, you know, some geopolitical thing for the next season, but like it does give us like a little bit of like time in between for things to kind of like shift around. It's not like all resolved in a neat bow when we come back. So that's something right. I kind of like appreciate about Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 from the MGM hit movie Forbidden Planet, starring Leslie Nielsen and Robbie the Robot. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I have two things, actually, because... And then, like, I'm going to also co-sign yours also. Like, the... Okay, one, Odo should have made plans with that sexy lady that Garrick tried to set him up with. I'm kind of upset because apparently she was going to be a recurring character in season 5, but the producers didn't think it worked. Like, give Odo a girlfriend if he wants one. I mean, he always is talking about how he doesn't want one, so that's kind of... But, you know... It still would have been nice. We know he does. He likes Kira. Mm-hmm. My second one is the household that O'Brien thinks up when he jokes about Bashir moving into his house to even things up. And then I like was like, hashtag wife swap. And then I felt a little gross about it because Nana and Alex like were actually married in real life. And you don't... And yeah, sorry to those people.
It's not a wife swap. It's just a kitchen table poly.
Yeah, right? That's fair. No, I just meant like two of them actually were married, so I felt like a little guilty. Yeah. But I will say that kids of poly parents often have a lot more care and better communication skills when they grow up. So Molly could have had a great life. More on that later.
It's funny though when O'Brien's like. Telling that story, he's like, I just walked in, it's like the holo suite program ended. Like...
That was so funny. What about you?
Yeah, so I think my nominee for the Thirst Quencher is during that same kind of combo when, you know, it sets up the update on the Klingon, the Cold War with the Klingons, and right before the right after the sneezing thing, Dax is being Dax and, you know, playfully argumentative. And It's like Worf's to Ben, like, was her previous host like this? And just that whole sequence is like, is Worf flirting with Jadzia? Is he like playfully teasing her? Like,
yeah.
More, let's keep an eye on that.
Yes. I loved it. It was great.
Elise, do you have a candidate for most Star Trek thing of the episode?
I think it was just me wanting to watch the next episode immediately because such a big thing was revealed.
Yeah, and that's...
It's kind of what you were saying like, before. Like, at first I was like, it's a cliffhanger, and then I watched it a second time, and I'm like, you know, it's not actually a to-be-continued, like a TNG ending would be. But it still feels very much like, I need to know what happens next. This was the first this was the first time watching the series back where it was the hardest. This was the hardest time to not continue.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely, let's say a season, they do the, you know, a season finale where it's like, oh, I can't, I have to wait 3 months for the next one.
Yeah, because this aired in June, and then the season, I think they had to wait till September, which actually is a lot shorter than between seasons of shows now, because the shows are so short, like so much shorter that the end date and then the start, it's usually a year between. But it's still that summer always felt, I didn't watch this, you know, when I was in school, but like I would watch, you know, Dawson's Creek or what, you know, Friends or whatever. And it was always a big deal to like wait over the summer just to find out what happened next.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, we had a cliffhanger on the last episode of Strange New Worlds, and we're going to, because of the strikes.
Oh yeah,
they're back filming now, but we're gonna be waiting like even longer than the 3 months to find out how the Gordon situation gets resolved. So
yeah, I can't believe we finished season 4.
Yeah, shit's wild.
It is wild.
Well, until next time, Elise. When can blah blah blah? Until next time, Elise. Where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you can catch me on Letterboxd and Blue Sky at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
Until next time, computer and program.